I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Woohoo! Happy New Year and welcome to 2022 with Reality Reno with us, Mitch and Mark.
Yeah, welcome back everyone. Mitchie, crazy week again for us. Like a lot of people, COVID is kind of the topic at the moment. We've done 4 rapid tests in 4 days, so we know that we're all clean.
And I now know if you shove the stick far enough up your nose and it draws blood, you definitely know you're going deep enough. This year, we have so much going on and we are going to take on 2022 like we did 2021. We are about to expand our Mitch and Mark home store in Newport.
Yeah, we need more space, but you have got Mitch and Mark Couture coming out.
Yeah, Mitch and Mark Couture is coming out. We've got our expanded linen range with towels and throws and sheets and all sorts of amazing stuff. Plus, we're doing design consults.
Yeah, so a lot of people have asked us whether or not they could get some advice on their interiors, colour, design, layout. People will be able to book in and be able to do a session with us, one or other of us, or maybe both of us, on their interiors.
So hence, we need more space at Mitch and Mark home in Newport. But another reno type of project we need to do is our home. Our home has been put off 2 years now because we've had things come up, like the block. But we need to reno it before it slips off the cliff that it's perched on.
Yeah, so Jason's coming up with Terry in about 2 weeks' time to start the process of looking through this whole house and getting it underway. We will keep you up to date with our reno of Newport. But in the meantime, we have got another episode with some amazing friends of ours.
Yes, we've got Ronnie and Georgia. Ronnie and Georgia, who we all know from the block, the feisty, fabulous couple, are back with us today on the show. They are not just block royal to us. They are best mates. We had so much fun being with them, and we had a really great chat with them. We love their style, which Georgia is just style queen.
Georgia's got an amazing style. She's got this beautiful sense of just simplicity and elegance.
What was fabulous was the honesty that they dealt up to us in the chat. They just literally gave us their life on a platter. Nothing was off limit. They talked about the auction day and how it felt, which, you know, was a testing time. It was tough. But those guys are open and honest and darn good people, and it's just so much fun to have them. But, Mikey, it was a bit of a sound issue.
Well, there was a little bit of a sound issue. When you're listening to this podcast, we just want you to know they had one set of AirPods to share. So one had one of the AirPods in one ear, one had in the other ear, but that meant that somebody had the microphone and somebody didn't.
But guys, I think it's worthwhile listening to. Let's go, Ronnie and Georgia. The amazing, incredible Ronnie and Georgia. Welcome, guys.
Hi, guys.
Thanks, Mitchie and Mark.
Wow, what an introduction, Mitchie. That would have hurt saying that.
No, I think you guys are amazing, well, particularly Georgia.
Well, Georgia's his favourite.
And there Ronnie, we go.
Know, Georgia is his favourite.
Yeah, well.
Listen, we don't play favourites, but if we were to, you know, Mitchie, you're mine.
I know that.
Oh, Mark, but I love
that.
You too.
I'm sorry, Ronnie, I knew that from being on the block because when Georgia would come to visit, it would be, Mitchie, how are you? And then I'd come and she'd go, oh, hello.
I want to wind the clock back further, like way further.
Well, Mitchie, before we wind the clock back that far,
yes?
What I'm relieved to see is that you're both together in your home because the rumours have been going crazy that Ronnie and Georgia have split, which is ridiculous.
Do you know what's hilarious?
That people, Georgia wishes.
No, you know what's hilarious? That people actually believe, like, these tabloid magazines. I was getting phone calls from my mates. I'm like, guys, you're smarter than this. Come on now.
And do you guys, would you guys ever believe Georgia to actually leave the Rondog? Come on.
Oh,
you're
not my gonna get God. Any better. Yes, I would, George. I've got to say, I was...
I was with you, Georgia. He is so annoying sometimes.
Yes, so annoying.
Sorry, Ronnie.
That, you know, people... you wouldn't, you know, question whether Georgia did leave the wrong dog. You'd be like, yeah, I get it.
For people listening, Mitch did now and then during the block say, Ronnie, I love you, but you're being annoying. And then didn't you say to Georgia, and Georgia, you would say, I know, I live with him. He's annoying.
No, actually, Georgia actually said to me one time, how dare you find him annoying? How do you think I feel?
That is true.
I think what's amazing is there are things that are written about people that are clearly untrue. The truth is you had to make a huge decision to leave Perth to go to the auctions. It was a big risk and you were so committed to the process that you took that risk.
Yeah, I had to pull the kids out of the last 6 weeks of school. But, you know, the block is a pretty significant part of our lives and we had to see the auction through, even though that meant pretty significant disruption to our family life. But to be honest, when we landed in Perth, I've never felt so good. I was just glad that that was all over.
To be home.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So when I was saying to go way back, I think that you've both got pretty interesting backgrounds. We'll touch on your singing and dancing, Georgia. But also, Ronnie, you arrived in Australia as a migrant as a child.
So my family made the decision back in 74 to come over to Australia from Argentina with my two older sisters. And, yeah, I was born in Sydney and then we drove over to Perth when I was 9 months old in a Kingswood.
Well, that's very Australian.
Do you reckon at that point they went, oh, my God, what have we done? Get us back to Argentina? Because the Nullarbor is, like, pretty full on, isn't it?
Yeah. And the thing is that I'm glad that my parents made that decision because I have been back to Argentina and they still live the same life. Like they don't have the opportunities. Yeah, they don't have the opportunities that we do over here. I believe we are, you know, living the Australian dream.
Although in saying that, you've got a cousin over there who's he's a professor and one's a lawyer and they're all doing pretty well.
No, hang on a minute. I'm talking about the country itself. Argentina has a lot of problems. All of South America has a lot of problems at the moment.
So, Ronnie, what motivated your parents? That's a huge change to go from a country that is Spanish-speaking to Australia that they, like, whatever they would have known about back in 75 and English-speaking and not known back then, you know, we're a land of migrants, but it's a very Anglo-Saxon. Mm. And back in that area, you know, how we accepted diversity is very different to how we do now.
Yeah, absolutely. My father was like a commercial pilot back in Argentina and he thought Australia would be the best opportunity for his family. And he was right. And when he landed in Australia, obviously he couldn't become a pilot because he didn't know how to speak English. But one of the first things that he did was he went for a walk in Sydney and came across a plasterer. And the plasterer was like...
He was Italian. The plasterer was Italian.
And my father asked him for a job and the Italian said, look, mate, I'm not a teacher, go away. So my dad struck a deal with this guy. His name was Chicho, and he struck a deal and said, look, let me work Chicho for 2 weeks, and if I prove myself, you can give me a job. And he did. So my dad did work for 2 weeks. That's my background. I'm a plasterer by trade, and that's because of my father's decision, going for a walk that day and just asking for a job because he needed cash. He realized he needed to put food on the table, and that was it.
Very cool.
It is. Yeah. I think the stories of the people who created Australia to be what we are now, it's interesting, and the challenges and the resilience, you know, the drive to go, I want something different. But it's scary when you go to somewhere new.
It is scary.
Being a pilot and having that qualification and having to leave that behind and take a trade is a big step.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely huge. And luckily for us is that when he arrived in Perth, he continued on with his plastering business. But we also renovated. That's where I got the love of renovating, through my father. My parents had renovated about 8 to 9 houses. So we were always moving every 2 to 3 years. So for me, it was very common. It was very common to, be in a house, watch my father fix it up, and then it will go straight on the market. So for me, moving was not foreign.
Georgia, did you ever see yourself as a renovator? Because from what I understood, you were a song and dance girl.
Well, actually, I was always that kid. Well, my parents built a house when I was, I think I was like one, and that was our family home forever.
Oh, you and, didn't move around the same way that
no,
we did.
We didn't move around. It was a pretty amazing house. It was on a big land, big property out in the Swan Valley. And so, yeah, it was really, yeah, it was a great way to grow up. I was just that kid that was forever rearranging my bedroom. Like, seriously, my mom, it would do my mom's head in. I'm like, I just want to rearrange my furniture. I just want to mix up the vibe. And I just remember loving doing that. And another thing, like when we were little, I used to drive, like we'd be driving somewhere and I'd be looking at houses and I'm not, this is no word of a lie. As a young kid, I'd be going, how can I change that house? How can I make that house look different? That's a really strange thought process for a young girl to have.
And to this day today, we actually, when the kids are in the car, when we're driving through suburbs that we've never been through, we actually play a game called Renovate or Detonate.
And this is so weird and this is nowhere to lie.
So we look at the house and we say, renovate or detonate. And the kids will go, and then throw the grenade over and say, detonate, start again.
But there was the performance aspect of your life too, Georgia.
Are you saying Georgia's a natural performer?
She's a performer.
I would never have known.
What do you mean? So at the age of six, I started playing the violin. Every morning before school, I'd do a 30-minute violin session. I used to hate it, but my mum would make me do it.
You didn't choose to play the violin. That was...
Well, my granddad played the violin, and then my mum wanted us to play a musical instrument. So both my older sister and myself played the violin. And then when I went to school, it was compulsory to do an instrument. And then my mum thought it was good to diversify. And then I played the double bass, which is like, bass. If you guys know, it's massive. It was bigger than I was. But what that actually did was give me a really sound understanding of how to read music. So then when I fell into the love of performing as a singer, I was actually able to read sheet music, which a lot of singers can't. When I then went on to, doing musical theatre at Whopper, I was one of the only singers who could actually read sheet music. So it was a massive advantage. So whilst I hated learning classical instruments and being dragged to classical concerts as a kid, now as an adult I had this massive appreciation for it. And, when I listen to music, I'm very moved by it and it emotes me to cry and it's very strange. But I must credit that to my upbringing, I suppose.
Your parents are a class act.
I would actually say they were.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. We've met your parents.
Yeah, they go all right.
They're beautiful.
They are. But you now would like your kids to get an appreciation of that music too.
Well, Leo, there was part of me that thought perhaps he could play a musical instrument and you guys have met Leo. Do you think that would be a possibility?
The triangle.
That kid could sit still and play a musical instrument. Yeah. No, he's very much a sporty kid. And Charlotte, she's going to be our mum's been like, come on, get her to do piano. She's very switched on, that little girl. But we're doing ballet instead. And ballet still integrates dance with beautiful music.
Yeah.
And so she's getting that appreciation through ballet.
And dance also through the emotional expression and experience of music. Mitch is waving at Leo in the background.
I can see the kids in the background.
So for listeners who cannot see, this moment, we have the beautiful Charlotte and the wonderful Leo in the background with mum and dad. They're going,
because we're home quarantining, right? So we're like, okay, I set them up in the TV room with a plate of food and like TV. I was like, don't come in for an hour. And now they've come in. So
Georgia and Roy, I don't like to appear to be sucky, but you two have obviously got something right in the formula. Your kids and it's not just Leo and Charlotte, but also Giordano. They are just Ronnie's your older son, and
my 20-year-old son. Yeah,
And Georgia's 20-year-old stepson,
bonus child.
I call him my gorgeous bonus child.
Oh, absolutely, but you guys have raised a beautiful young man, but such beautiful kids. What do you say is the secret that makes your kids just seem easier to be around than a lot of others?
You know, for me, Georgia has done an incredible job. She's very structured and she has a routine with the children. And even Giordano, watching him grow up, because when I first met Georgia, Giordano was 2.5 years old. So for me, as a young man growing up with a young child, I needed that structure, and that's where Georgia actually stepped in and helped me become a better parent, because I didn't have an idea. I didn't have a clue.
But you seem to be strict. You seem to be quite strict, like a lot of love, but there's really clear boundaries.
There's routine, yeah.
Yeah, I think kids thrive on routine and boundaries, and I think it makes them feel secure and safe. They might not like it, some of the time, but I also think that's what they need. And obviously that's how I was raised. I have very strict upbringing, but I now as a parent look back on how I was parented, and I'm so thankful that that's how my parents were. So, I think routine's very important, but we also like to have fun, and we let the kids have an opinion. And the best example of what we're showing our children at the moment is what hard work looks like. Being away from them for a significant amount of time when you feel on the block, that wasn't easy for anybody. Mm. So if the biggest takeaway we can have from that is, well, this is what hard work looks like, mm-hmm. then that's something we're happy mm. with.
Georgia, so you became yes. a stepmom at mm. a very young age, I think, weren't you?
I was 21, yeah. and I remember when I first met Ronnie and he sort of mentioned that he had a kid, I was like, oh, that's a bit heavy. I'm going to step away from that because I'm not really interested in dating someone with a child at 21. But then when I started to get to know Ronnie and then met Giordano, I was like, actually, this is probably something I could do. But, you know, trying to parent as a 21-year-old, you're still a kid yourself, really, aren't you? You know, I was sort of just learning as I was going along as well. And, you know, I think co-parenting is a massive challenge, and I know a lot of Australian families go through that. We all came out of it quite unscathed. So, it takes a little bit to get used to, but, you know, Geordie is just an amazing human because he was raised by, you know, his mum, who's an amazing influence in his life, and he's got both of us as well. So, he's had a lot of love around him growing up, yeah.
Going back to, you know, at 21, the responsibility of that role, these days we often talk about our kids, well, we do, and you go, oh, they're young, and you think, well, they're 28, 29, they're young. But 21 is young to take on that responsibility. Was it a difficult decision to do that, and what did you learn about yourself almost through that process? What did Giordano teach you about yourself?
It was hard. I wasn't going to say it was easy. It was definitely something challenging to take on, but obviously it was worth it for me. I guess I grew up quicker than any other 21-year-old. That was definitely something that we took away from it. But, you know, we also understood that, wow, if Ronnie and I can survive co-parenting, if we can survive renovating and moving all the time, if we can navigate the challenges of ex-partners in amongst all of this and still come out unscathed.
And, guys, I'll be honest, thank God she came along at that time, because I just started renovating my second house, but I was by myself. I didn't have a lot of cash, but every time I'd finish work at about 1, 2 o'clock, I'd come home and do something. But I was so petrified of picking paint colours and making any design. I was just doing all the structural stuff. And meeting Georgia, she was very reluctant for the first couple of months to actually, you know, give me her opinion. But thankfully, she did, and it made my life so much easier, because having that talent as a designer, having the vision, knowing what colours go with each other, like, that is really hard.
But think about it. Like, back then when I was 21, I wasn't a trained interior designer. I had no idea. I just sort of knew what I liked and what I thought looked good. You know, I have never studied this, but it's just something that I surround myself with. I think I innately know what looks good, and it goes back to just having natural talent. I really think it's a lot of people can do an online course or go to university and study this sort of stuff, mm-hmm. but whether or not you are actually good at it, I think it's a natural ability. Would you agree?
If I look at some of the best chefs in the world, they have not got professional training. Some of the most renowned chefs in the world, and nobody doubts that they're a great chef.
It's a gift, right?
You've either got it or you haven't.
It's a natural gift that you've got. I think people are sort of born with their talents, right? Yes. And it's the lucky few who can discover them and help them grow and sort of like nurture that talent, right? And then if down the track of your life, if you find that you've fallen into a career where you get to use that natural gift, it's like your happy space. And I just think it's like, that was your purpose. That's what you were meant to be doing, and how lucky that you now get to continue along that path and you're in your happy place.
You can be educated to have the professional skills at all sorts of things, but to be a natural, even in Mark's field of psychology, you can train to be a psychologist, but you can you can't become inquisitive and caring enough to do the best job.
I like to think that the sort of work
that
you do, and maybe it turns up on the block, maybe similarly for both of us, you know, there's a technical skill side, and there's almost a bit of a scientific side about how things are built and constructed, and even from a design mm-hmm. perspective, how things are scaled and balanced. But there are certain things that are the, you know, right brain, left brain. It's like certain right brain things that are about colour and feeling and emotion that you evoke through the way you put together an interior, the colours, the way it's styled. That is the skill and the eye, because some people can do the same thing, the same colours, and you walk into the space and go,
What set Georgia apart from a lot of people. Like, obviously, we would find out what the rooms are going to be on Sunday night. And then Georgia would
unless
go home.
Unless you had a schedule and you knew what they were in
the van.
Georgia, are we going there?
Well, we are going there, right?
I would basically go home and pass out, literally be in bed by about 9, 9:30, whereas Georgia would be up designing the room.
On a Sunday night, right, right, guys, we find out at judging what the next room is going to be.
Yeah.
You basically spend the following hours stressing about going, oh, my God, what are we going to do? Oh, my God, oh, my God. We'd be in bed, yes, Ron would tap out and he'd be asleep, and I would just be in my head more so thinking about layout and where everything's going to go, right? Well, my theme for my house is generally already set, so you sort of know the, like, I guess the holistic look of what your home is going to look like. So you've got your flooring already selected, you know the window treatments are going to be the same, you know your wall colour, and it's like, how am I going to give this room an identity where it's connected to the other rooms but it's got its own sort of personality? And so for me, my starting point, I don't know about you, Mitzi, but mine was always artwork. I would try and find my artwork as a starting point. And once I had found that, I would be then like, okay, what linens am I going to pull in? What's my bed head going to look like? Do I need an occasional chair? Do I need a rug? And it would all be connected to that artwork. So that's usually how I would start a room.
You might have started with a beautiful artwork and designed around the artwork. In our case, we weren't winning any rooms, so I wasn't able to start with a beautiful artwork. I would start with an affordable artwork that I could get for free somewhere.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Mitch had asked you about kind of where you both came together, but how did you both meet?
I was on a plastering break. I was on a lunch break. I went to a Japanese restaurant on Beaufort Street in Mount Lawley. Well, I was completely looked like a tradie. I was with one of my mates, and I remember sitting down at this Japanese restaurant and looking over and hearing these two girls talk about their weekend. And I'm thinking to myself, listen to these girls. You just listen. They're so loud for one, but talking about how many drinks they got, where they went, I was like, oh, my God, this sounds like hard work, right? So I didn't – and Georgia was with her best friend, Natalia. I remember sitting down eating my Japanese, looking at these two hot chicks and thinking, oh, my God, I'm not even going to try. That was on a Tuesday, and then on Thursday night.
Your version of the story is all wrong. Okay, so we were at this Japanese restaurant. I thought Ronnie was my ex-boyfriend because he was working on a trade site near the restaurant, and they look similar. And I was going, oh, my God, Natalia, is that, I'm not going to say his name, but I'm going to say, is that Rara? And she was like, no, it's not. I was like, oh, good. So then we sat down, and then we were like sort of I was checking Ronnie out, but he was checking Natalia out. Anyway, they got up and walked out that same night. We went out to another bar in Claremont, which is a different suburb. And Ronnie was there. I didn't know this.
I was there on a date, guys.
I didn't know that.
I was the hot commodity back in those days.
Oh, raised himself.
And I had him lined up. But Georgia, I was, I was there sitting outside with a date. And Georgia.
Went out to the bar.
I had to go. You're going to let me talk?
Well, you didn't.
I went to the toilet, and then Georgia was at the bar and actually stopped me and said, you were in Mount Lawley. And I said, yes, I was in Mount Lawley. And then I said, look.
I saw you at lunchtime today. You were at the Japanese restaurant.
And what I found most attractive about Georgia was the fact that she was paying out of my shoes that I was wearing. Like the bickering started basically straight away. And I've never had that from a female before.
They were white and pointy.
Yeah, you never trust a guy with white pointy shoes. And
what are your footwear? Like, what shoes are you wearing,
bro? The fact that she actually, gave it to me, I was really impressed with, because I never had that from a female before.
Anyway, so then he tried to ask my phone number.
No, hang on a minute. So I was still on a date, guys. So I remember coming back and I said, look, George, give me half an hour. Let me get rid of my date and I'll come back.
I didn't know you had a date.
You dumped your date that night for Georgia.
I dumped her in half an hour. Came back to the bar.
Shouldn't have, because I was never going to cook up with him.
And then
he tried to get my number.
Hello, you're here now.
No, but this guy, Then he tried to get my number, and I was like, no, I'm not interested. I'm like, I was having a good time. I was 21, you know.
She wasn't interested, so Georgia was there with one of her girlfriends. She ended up taking me home. I ended up getting on with her.
Oh, well, that's
so that is, I mean, if you want to tell a
what?
Story, I mean,
you yeah, want to dissect the story. Yeah, so then I found this out, and I was like, oh, gross, whatever.
Oh, my
yeah,
God, you hooked up with Georgia's friend that night because Georgia wasn't interested in you.
Correct.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I need no, hang on. I needed a lift home because don't forget, I ditched my date and I needed a lift home.
Taxi, mate.
Taxis.
No, it was Claremont. Back in those days, you didn't order taxis. Back
God,
in those
the love
days.
Story started. Claremont, well, didn't
you
it?
Know, that is this is so where like funny. The Claremont killer. Serial killers were. Yeah, so you didn't, you know, no one called taxi. And then we used to just see each other out all the time, and then Ronnie would be like, can I have your number? Every time I would see him, I'd be like, I'm okay, I'll see you around. And then he became our free drinks guy. We'd be like, oh, there's Ron, let's go get a drink, you know?
Oh, Ronnie.
And then, I don't know, eventually 4 weeks of harassing me for my number, I finally gave in. And then we went on a date. And
no, but the way you gave the number was impressive. I was friends with a girl that actually worked next door to Georgia, and she gave the number to her, and she got my number off my friend, and then Georgia sent me a text message and said,
Here's my number. Don't waste it.
Yay. Love it.
I had game back in the day, guys. Don't you worry.
So, and the funniest part about that is that I brought Georgia a toothbrush within 3 or 4 days. So I knew that she was the one. But you should have seen Georgia get rid of all the girls that I had lined up one by one. She was ruthless, mate.
What are you talking about? Get rid of the girls you had lined up.
What are you talking about? She knew what she wanted, guys, and she had to get rid of the girls that I was already saying.
Ronnie, it was you. Look at you, Ronnie. How could she resist, right?
This is Ronnie just making this up, just trying to recover a little bit of pride. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, wow, dude.
Actually, do you know what? This brings me to something. Georgia.
Yes.
Throughout the block.
Yes.
And post. Yes. You've often, you and I have discussed that.
Yes.
Ronnie can say something a bit crazy, bit left of centre, and he's a legend. But if you do the same, you're a loudmouth.
Oh, here we go.
You're a loudmouth.
Well, I think, you know.
Here we go.
Putting yourself on TV, particularly on reality TV, you're subject to public opinion, right?
And
social media is a vehicle for that. So every Tom, Dick and Harry thinks they are entitled to have an opinion on you and what you do and who you are, okay? That's just part of the deal when you sign up for reality TV, okay? Look, I'm not a massive feminist. I believe in strong women and equality, and I think that it's just sort of, I guess, affected me directly more so this year. Ron can say quite polarizing comments and he can stir the pot and start shit fights. And we know that that's who Ronnie is, and people love it. Now, if I say things or if I, you know, stand up for myself or say a slightly controversial comment, I'm a bitch, and Ronnie, put a muzzle on your wife, and these are the comments that we'll get. It's such a double standard, and it's just where society is at. There's a bit of a sad place that we find ourselves in, I think.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
I'm curious to ask you guys, Ronnie and Georgia are, you know, I said earlier, block royalty, and I think that you are. You first appeared in 2017 on the block, and I think very quickly gained a following and gained, you know, a reputation and gained a brand through that. I think, Georgia, you did that wallpaper that kind of set the tone for a couple of years.
Yeah.
You know, that
the Ellie Cashman wallpaper.
Yeah. And we got to meet you in 2019 when you came and did All Star. So we didn't really know you. We got to know you this season. Where did the why did the block journey start for Ronnie and Georgia? Why did you do this?
I could never watch the block because I used to feel I used to get frustrated, but then there was also, if I'm going to be honest, probably part of me going, oh, I wish that was me doing that. So it just felt like I could never watch it. And Ron used to watch it a lot. And just because we renovated houses.
I think at that time we'd renovated like 8 houses. And then I would actually get inspiration from watching the block, get some ideas. And for me, it was never the right timing. There was a couple of times in 2015 and 16, Georgia was like, oh, should we apply for the block? And it was never the right timing for us. I was either finishing a renovation.
Well, you know, having kids and small children, like family gets in the way. Because what people don't understand is to actually go on the block, it's 3 months filming. It's then 3 months waiting for it to go to air. Then it's 3 months PR, watching it on TV. So it really is a massive, let's say, it's really a year that you have to tap out of life.
Yep.
You can't. It's a struggle to maintain a job and do all of that as well. So you have to be in a financial position where you can go, okay, we can put everything on hold for a year at the guess that we're actually going to walk away with a little bit of money to cover us.
But you know,
worst case scenario, right?
Having said that, is that, you know, when we did apply, like the very first question that we had to ask was who was going to look after the kids, and that was George's parents. And I think when we asked them, they were like, oh, mate, what are the chances of these guys actually getting in? Of course we'll look after the kids. You know, you guys, because at that time there was like 20, 25,000 people applying for the block. And then, you know, once we started getting through the process, George's parents were like, oh, my God, this could actually be happening. So, you know, watching them and, you know, we could never have done it if they hadn't said yes to looking after kids. You know, we wouldn't be where we are today. We'd probably still be renovating houses, but... Yep. But yeah, I mean, you know, if it wasn't for Lou and Pete, that was a huge step.
And this whole concept of block royalty is kind of like blows my mind a little bit. If you look at both of our seasons, we came third our first season, and then this season we've rolled in last place.
But I think it's interesting, Georgia. I don't think that sort of stuff matters. I think people see who you are as people and how you interact together and how, you know, it's that resonates for people, because our experience is people who love the show, who watch the show, they remember certain couples for other reasons because they inspired them, because they did something new or different, because they were strong.
Yeah, I think that's a good takeaway as well, Mark, and thank you for that. I think our first season, I don't think a lot of people got who we were, and I think perhaps we got a little bit more of the villain edit, even though I hate to say you get an edit. I think we certainly got a little bit more of that in 2017. So I think this recent season was great redemption for us, because I think people actually got to see who we really are and how we interact and what we're all about. So, and perhaps we came into this a little bit more relaxed and less stressed because it wasn't all new to us. So we could be a little bit more who we are in everyday life. So, I look back at the whole block experience and it's some of the coolest shit you ever get to do in your life, right? It's pretty fun. And our first season, to be honest, it was pretty disastrous in terms of the friendship stakes for us. I just don't think we found our people there. So I was very, very concerned coming back the second time around that we were going to be in the same position. But thankfully we met amazing people like you guys who just got us and were cool with being competitive and calling people out if they've done the wrong thing. Even you called us out sometimes and we called you guys out sometimes. Yes. But like the good thing about that was that we could be like the next day, yep, cool, fair enough, okay, move on. And I love that about it. And even, you know, Josh and Luke to a degree, you could call them out on stuff, and Tanya and Vito, and they could hack it.
Yeah.
I think Kirst and Jess perhaps were a little bit more sensitive when it came to that sort of thing. But, you know, I was glad walking away with a lot more friends this season, and that's probably one of my biggest takeaways. So thank you to you guys for that.
But you know, we totally relate. We totally relate because you go back in the second time thinking, well, is it us? Is it us? Are we the problem? We seem to be okay outside in the real world, but is it us in our environment? And we both...
I had that same thought process.
I found that we could actually make friends on TV. Well,
it's interesting because Mitch and I talked about the decision to go back, and for us it was a very quick decision. It was like immediately, yep, love to do it. But we did think, what do you want to get out of going back again? Because as you said, Georgia, The auction is a risk, so you have to be prepared to go and do something and maybe not walk away with a financial return. And you and I, Mitch and I, talked about it and said, you know, I would like to walk away with friends, because we got feedback and people saying to us from our season, oh, how come you don't get along with other people? It must be you. And we started to go, well, maybe it is. And we've walked away this season with friends. So to have you guys turn up and be in the house next to us and then go, we got on really well and we like you and we have fun and we call each other out, and you're able to do that.
Georgia and I love each other, Mark.
You and Georgia, I know. Ronnie, I was worried. I thought Georgia and Mitch were going to run away together. That is a big takeaway.
We'd make a hot couple, wouldn't we? But I couldn't deal with the fact that Mitch would look better than me all the time, and I'd probably have a little bit of insecurity around that. So it probably wouldn't work in the long run, you know? Like,
you could borrow my clothes.
But to be able to come away.
We could.
You know, and to have friends has been a very important part of the process for us, because everyone's strong personalities who do a show like The Block.
And I can definitely say, like, one of the questions I get asked the most over the last couple of months is that, will you do it again? And the question to that is, our block journey is done. We'll never go back. And that chapter for me, it was very important for me to close that chapter, close the book, and then pick up another book.
I would go back and do, like, a guest judge on, like, a challenge or something fun like that. I would for sure go back and do that.
I'm going to The rumor, Georgia is going back as the judge, as a judge on The Block next year. Is that the rumor, Georgia?
I personally haven't heard this rumor, but have mentioned it to me. Well, should we start it? No, but listen, they're not gonna, if it's not broken, don't fix it.
I think the block without Scotty Cam and the judges just wouldn't be The Block. It's as simple as that.
I think
someone to step into a new role on that show, I don't think it would work.
Really? I think maybe a judge that has
I don't think it would work.
Don't you? I think, maybe Scotty, you couldn't. I think it'd be very tough to do it without. Scotty is so integral in that.
Iconic.
I think it's iconic. Yeah, iconic.
Absolutely.
And I think that would, you couldn't. You couldn't do it without that.
But also, can I just interject quickly? What Scotty Cam delivers is so amazing. He's such a consummate professional.
Mm.
He can just read a script and deliver it 2 minutes later. You know, I'm in awe of what he can do. So good luck to anyone else who would try and do that.
I feel the same way about Shelley Craft.
Yeah.
Shelley,
totally.
On that auction day, Shelley's got an earpiece. She's watching Vision and things are happening all around, and she was able to just connect in with people. Mm. I'm in awe of her ability to do that.
Yeah. And don't forget, I mean, she's been doing that for over 25 years. Scotty Cam, what you see is what you get with Scotty. You know, he's the epitome of the Australian tradie. Everyone loves him, but he works extremely hard to get. It looks like it's effortless to him, but he still puts in a lot of work. It's still a lot of time, a lot of effort.
He takes his job very seriously. He's not really there to, like, have fun with the cast. He's there to, like, do his job and be the best that he can be. I get that now, yeah.
And what people don't realise is that, yes, there's a script that he has to learn, but it's word for word. To be given a script 2 or 3 hours beforehand and then to actually deliver it without making any mistakes, I mean, come on, there's no one that could ever replace Scotty Cam.
No.
But also, we're there being ourselves and just saying whatever comes to us at the moment.
He has to
deliver, as you said, he's got to deliver a script to navigate, but also then handle one of us contestants having a whinge or whatever and trying or a walk off judging.
Who would do that?
Not a walk off.
We love a bit of a walk off, don't we, George?
But then he's got to redo the script on the fly. So yeah, very clever. Let's go to the auction day.
Auction day. You know what? So the lead up to auction day was just incredibly stressful because
absolutely
yes.
It was back and forth. Are we going? Are we not going? Ronnie was in Sydney. I was
already in Sydney filming Celebrity Apprentice. So I'd filmed 3.5 weeks of that. And then I had to come over back to Melbourne to meet Georgia for the auction.
And so I was just sort of navigating, you know, single parenting with kids. And it was just the decision of it was a pretty significant decision to pull the kids out of school and move to a state where it's COVID, it's rampant. And you're putting yourselves at risk and you're putting your kids at risk who are unvaccinated. And so it was a significant choice for me to make, and I was highly stressed. And so that was the start of it.
Yeah, and you know, in my head, I thought that we were, you know, going to be doing really well in the auction. You know, in the lead up to the auction, we'd obviously watched the show, we'd finished it, you know, 5 months prior. You know, I think we've delivered a house that could actually win the block.
We were like, I think this is potentially a winning home. We'd had the most interest on Domain. We'd had the most registered bidders out of any of the houses, and so it was like auction order. What were we thinking? We were always thinking first or second, first or second.
Going in, we were always going to put Kirsty and Jess first. We were going to go second, and then you guys third, fourth, and fifth. So, but then as soon as we found out what those reserves were, it all changed because
for us, it was like we can't put Kirsty and Jessie first because if their house tanks. As in, like, it doesn't sell for a lot.
Hey, guys, the reserves are 4.5. And I was thinking there's no way, you know, Kirsty and Jess's house was going to sell for more than that.
It sets the standard for our houses. Our houses were significantly smaller than theirs. So then how could our houses reach such high prices if theirs was only worth that much?
That reserve day was a pivot point.
Everything changed.
Also, we thought Kirsty and Jess they're a standalone. They have their own unique buyers. Whether they go first, second, third, fourth, or fifth, it's not going to affect the auction outcome because none of our buyers were buying a Kirsty. Well,
take the Danny Wallace factor out because that guy was just, you know, you take him out of the picture. You know, we thought we'd done enough. You know, out of 10 buyers, our house would appeal to maybe 8 of those.
Yes.
Buyers. So the messaging we were getting was you guys should go first because you need to set the tone for everybody else. And so I think we were just,
confident. The agent, David Wood, was giving us, you know, positive feedback. It is what it is. Going first, it's going to be incredibly hard, but, you know, let's do it. Let's see if we can set precedents for everyone else. And we did.
And, we thought going first would put us in the best position to win the block because that's what you want to do. You want to win the block. Anyway, it didn't turn out that way, did it?
But it's funny because when you say set the precedence for others, I was thinking to myself, that's one thing, but surely you wanted to win the block.
Of course you want to win the block. That's the priority. You put yourself where you think you are going to do best.
And why did you think first was the best place for that?
We wanted to have the pool of all the buyers first.
Yeah.
We wanted them to choose our house first and then not. We didn't want to lose buyers as they go along, In hindsight, we probably should have put house four first.
Yeah.
Anyway, to be honest, I really hate talking about it because it just brings up so many emotions like that I've put to bed. And so now we have to talk about it again, guys. Oh, my God. It stresses me out.
And for me, like I kind of tapped out the minute I found out that Tanya and Vito and Josh and Luke were going to beat us. I was like, how is this possible, mate? That was a hard pill to swallow. I had a very conscious decision. Do I have a complete meltdown in front of all of Australia or do I walk away for a bit? And I decided to walk away and then come back at the end. But, it just didn't pan out the way I had expected. And then knowing that I had to then get on a plane the day after and then go finish another reality TV show. For me, I was dealing with a lot.
Yeah, you weren't just coming from, you'd been on a full-on competitive TV show, working crazy hours to come film this auction to the next day having to fly back and film straight away. Yeah. Like you were going through a lot.
So you've come in to the auction from a different position than other people because you've been on this roller coaster for another show, flown in, bang, auction happens.
Yeah, a surreal experience for us, or for me in particular, going to the auction and knowing that I was going to be on a plane in 8 hours. And flying straight back to Sydney, going straight into another episode of The Celebrity Apprentice.
Also, I feel like you were conscious of where I was mentally with it all and not wanting to come and sort of struggling with the kids on my own. So I think you carried a little bit of guilt with that as well. So you actually probably had quite a lot that you were trying to.
I had a lot of balls up in the air, that's for sure. And I think we made that decision for Georgia because the plan was for Georgia not to come over to Sydney. But the borders had changed. There's no way that Perth was going to let Georgia and the kids come in from Melbourne. So we made the decision, come hang out in Sydney for, 5 or 6 weeks and then fly from Sydney back to Perth. And I think we made the right decision,
It was a lot.
It is.
But the auction wasn't just so straightforward.
It was a more complex situation. But it's very easy to watch it and assume it's an auction. There was so much going on.
But to be totally honest, the auction didn't pan out the way we expected it either.
We didn't expect it.
Aren't you glad it did then?
Yeah. Oh, the thing is that you don't you don't have any control. One thing that really made it real for me was when we found out what the reserves were going to be, the look on Scotty Camp's face.
Yes.
Like, because he doesn't get told that. When we find out, he finds out. And when I looked in his eyes, I was like, oh, man, we are all absolutely screwed.
Yeah.
Not all of us. You know, and listen, guys, please. Like, the takeaway was, like, you know, just almost $300,000 for us tax-free, which is a massive amount of money. And, you know, like, I know a lot of Australian families that would just be sensational. Like, it would be life-changing, as it is for us. And so I don't want people – I think the misconception is that we weren't grateful for the amount of money that we won, and that's not the case. I think it was more surrounded by ego and coming last, to be honest with you. It was – that was – and other teams that we felt were less deserving coming, you know, second, third, and fourth. You know, it was just like it was really more of a – yeah, I think it was like an ego thing, right?
Yeah, for me it was certainly an ego thing because I – very rarely came last at a lot of things. So, like,
does that make sense to you?
I grew up playing sports because in our auction
in Oslo, and we went into our auction we didn't think that we would win the auction. We went in, I think, as like a bookie's favourite, but just things that we listened to and thought, well, I don't think we're going to win. But I know my ego took a big blow to come last.
Yeah,
and it was about whoa. We came last, and like you, we won a lot of money, and we're so grateful for that. But on the day, it was so intense. Personally, I felt exhausted. I completely understand what you're saying. You're good people.
We're very grateful. You know, I would never have been asked to go on Celebrity Apprentice. You know, we've got TV shows coming up next year. Like, we're winning at life. For me, I've dealt with it, and that chapter is closed. And, you know, moving forward, as long as I've got Georgia by my side, it is all good.
That's
just continue being less annoying. And
well, that's never going to change, darling, ever.
But you know what's great about this? Our biggest takeaway was, you know, we're hanging out in Sydney and you guys reached out to us and said, come up and hang out with us in Newport. And you took the time out of your busy schedules. And let me just tell all the listeners out there, I've never met a couple of guys that work harder than you two. Like, we were down and you were so accommodating to the kids, and you guys were like just getting your stock ready and opening your store up, getting prepared for that. And you actually both took the time out to show us around where you live, which is amazing, by the way, and take us out for dinner. And it was just, I really enjoyed that special time we had with you guys. So thank you. Great. And that's what friendship's all about. So we look forward to returning that favor when you come to Perth.
I can't wait.
Before
we go, I do want to turn the tables. And I want to offer you guys the chance to ask us a question. We've asked you enough. And I'm talking any question at all you like. Anything.
Anything.
When you first saw us coming up in the Mustang, right, did you guys feel threatened?
No.
Didn't feel threatened.
No. I felt happy.
I was like, I know these guys are good.
Oh, yeah.
So, one, I respect you. I will always say, as soon as Georgia stepped out of the car, I went, she is so hot.
Oh, my God, that's so hilarious.
That suit and those heels. But I knew you guys are so good at what you do that it was like, yep, it'll be tough.
I personally felt, though, like, I suppose I don't go there so much with the competition. I just think that maybe I run my own race more so, but I just knew that we would click. And to see you guys come up and larger than life, I just felt like, yay, these will be our people.
And I always said about you, you can put a twig in a glass and it will look fabulous. And that's the style, but it's the stuff that we don't do.
And I can't do what you guys do. I'm like, if I chuck that much stuff on a shelf, it just looks like it's not great. You guys make it look good.
Best thing that ever came out of the block this season, maybe like you guys gave us some resolution to our first experience. So coming away with friends, meeting people like you guys has given us, I don't know, maybe put us at peace as well, because we had a similar feeling from our first season when we felt disconnected. So I'm very, very pleased that we've become friends.
So on that note, I would like to thank you both so much for not only being with us today, But thank you for giving us more than we ever anticipated taking away from the block. We've been so fortunate to take away some very, very special friends that we imagine will be in our lives going forward. Can't wait to watch your family develop and grow and be part of it going forward.
And see you on our telly next year.
Oh, and to you guys too, thank you so much for your, you know, your constant encouragement and friendship. And, of course, you know, the biggest of congratulations to winning the block, fans versus faves.
Well done, guys.
Well done, guys.
Thank you.
I can't wait to see the projection of your career and everything that you're doing, particularly in the realm of brand development and product development. I'm really excited to see where you guys go for that.
Thank you so much.
Give us a call next time you're in Perth.
We'll see you in Perth.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And Merry Christmas.
Ho, 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 and I'm not talking about you personally. Thank you so much, guys. That was such a fabulous chat. So gracious and so honest. Ronnie and Georgia, you were just brilliant having that show.
I think it's one thing, Mitch, I always know with Ronnie and Georgia, they are so honest about how they think and how they feel. You can always rely on them to be upfront.
There's no BS, Mark. What you see is what you get. And I love them to bits, particularly Georgia. Georgia and I have a special bond. I think she loves me more than you, because Georgia does tell me that she loves me sometimes, which is in the right frame of mind.
I know she does. I tell her all the time. I know that. But that's it from us today. Please kick off 2022 by giving us a rating on the podcast. 5 stars is always a good review.
Coming up next week, we've got our country favourites, the country sweethearts of Australia, Kirsty and Jessie, talking about renovations and life. I love these two crazy kids. So subscribe to Reality Renter with Mitch and Mark wherever you get your podcasts from.
And please tell your friends about our podcast. Share it with people who you think might be interested in a bit of fun, learning a bit about renovations.
But here's to 2022 being bigger and better than the last 2 years for all of us. Catch you next week. And as George would say, bye. Bye.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.